when we die, if we become a ghost, I think a lot of us associate that as our soul is now that. Our soul is the ghost. It's that thing that is out there that is perpetuating energy and trying to communicate with those who are still alive. When you're alive and there's another soul next to you, both are alive. Sometimes a connection can be made, a very deep connection can be made, where you don't realize how deep that connection is until death. Sometimes just passing by someone on a daily basis, helping them out when they're in need. Maybe just another step in your day, but to that one individual, it can mean life or death. And how deep a bond that would be if you're in that situation. Those bonds are pretty amazing. On today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online, we hear about some soul bonds. One between just that. Two individuals pass each other every day. One not in a good situation, the other more secure and in a better situation. And the one helping the other day after day. Not even getting to know the other's name, but helping them on a human level. And then when one passes, that bond still exists. Also, a bond with a woman in a house that she just had to have. Turned out it was once the site of a murder, a brothel, and many other questionable behaviors. But there's an unspoken bond between generations, times that she wasn't even alive in, and those that have passed away that once called that very location home. Those stories and more today in EPP bonus episode number 414 of Real Ghost Stories Online. My name's Tony Bruschi. Stay with us. Do you know someone that you pass by every single day of the week? It may be a security guard. It may be a person that's working in your office, somebody down the hall a little ways. It may be a homeless individual that stands near the entrance to your building looking for help, looking for some safe food to eat as they continue to battle their demons that keep them in such a horrible state. What about when you get to know one of those people? You get to find out who they are, why they're there, the things that they battle, the things that they once were, and how it all came crashing down. You kind of make a friendship. Although neither may know each other's name, there's a human bond there. Of decency. And when that one person passes away, that bond that may have just been a small part of your life was the major part of theirs at the end. And they're not ready to let it go. You're someone who cared for them and showed them decency and love. In our next story, that's exactly what happens. Woman, day after day, brings extra food down to the man who's homeless that lives near her building. Shows him care, understands his story a bit. He was a veteran. And now he's there battling addiction, so desperately wants things to change, but doesn't have the means to make it happen. And eventually he passes. He doesn't want that bond to end. Take a listen. I moved into the second floor of my building about a year ago. A few weeks after moving in, I met a homeless man that sleeps in the back of my building in a doorway that has a small awning over it. Though his bed was on the opposite side of the building, he spent most of his time near the front entrance, trying to talk to residents of the building out of a few bucks here and there. Most of my neighbors are uppity sort who felt that this man was more of a nuisance than anything and often either ignored him or belittled him. This man was an obvious alcoholic who spent nearly every dollar he received on booze, and while the entire area around the entrance reeked of vodka every time he was there, he was still a human being and deserved to be treated with dignity. I felt adamantly that he should be respected, and though I didn't give him any money, I brought him down a plate of almost everything I cooked. Because of this, he developed a particular affinity for me. Every time I brought him food, I would sit and watch him eat. This was a great opportunity for conversation. I learned all about his time spent in Vietnam and his daily struggle with alcoholism, among other things. He made clear to me how much he wished he could reach sobriety, get a job, and no longer rely on panhandling to survive. I also discovered how much he appreciated the home-cooked meals. I guess the local shelter served 2 meals a day, but the food was always past the use-by date. It was all donated, and I was so horribly prepared that it bordered on inedible. So I appreciated the healthy, delicious, not too toot my own horn, but I am a pretty good cook. Made from scratch meals I delivered to him. One night, mouthful of chicken tikka masala, he said to me, "You know, you're probably keeping me alive." Cut to one night after a few months of knowing this man, I walked home by friends after a late night of hanging out. We stood outside near the door to the building, just talking and laughing before I went inside to bed. This must have been about 2 in the morning. On the front of the building, there are these huge windows that let you see inside the entire lobby area. The security desk, the elevator, stairwell, everything. In the lobby, there are also 2 small bathrooms, one male, one female, that have just a single toilet and a sink. They aren't the ones with stalls that allow multiple people to do their business at the same time. After a few minutes of talking, I happened to glance through the windows to see the door to the male bathroom open, and standing over the toilet was the homeless man. Though he was vomiting, it wasn't an odd sight because the security guards let him in the building to use the bathroom all the time. And yes, due to his alcoholism, he was often seen vomiting. This was something my snobby neighbors were particularly uptight about because they felt allowing this man into the building brought down the exclusivity and richness of not only the building, but also the neighborhood. While I saw their point, this guy was just a really nice guy who fought for this country and then fell upon some very hard times. Let the guy use the bathroom, for crying out loud. One of my friends, Craig, noticed the man vomiting as well, which prompted me to explain the man's situation. I turned my back from the window for a few minutes and I told Craig all about the man's time in Vietnam, his probable PTSD, and his struggle with alcohol. Craig initially sided with my uptight neighbors, which made me speak in defense of the man. After a few minutes, though, Craig loosened up. Nearing the end of the conversation, Craig, who was facing the window but was focused on me, looked up towards the direction of the bathroom. His face immediately went pale and his jaw dropped. I quickly turned around to see the bathroom door still open, but the walls smeared with blood. The man was slumped over the toilet but appeared to still be vomiting. I ran to the door, punched in my code. When I got to the lobby, I looked for a security guard. Not a soul was in the lobby or even appeared to be on the main floor, besides the man in the bathroom and myself. I ran to the security desk, called for an ambulance. The operator made me stay on the line until the ambulance got there, though I so badly wanted to run to the bathroom to check on the guy. I periodically called out to him to ask if he was all right, but received no reply. After a few minutes of this, the security guard finally appeared. He saw the activity in the bathroom without me having to say anything and ran across the lobby to help. He gently helped the man to the ground and called out that he wasn't breathing. He said he was going to try CPR, but I stopped him and asked the 911 operator if he should, with all the blood and fluids covering the man's face and chest. He had 2 people speaking at me at the same time, the lady saying he should not perform CPR because of the biohazard risk, and the security guard saying there was something hanging out of the man's mouth. He said he was going to try and remove it, but stopped short, saying, I think it's some kind of organ in his mouth. And I nearly fainted. About 20 minutes, the ambulance finally arrived. EMTs rushed in. I explained everything, and one of them escorted both the security guard and me outside. Once outside the building, my friends ambushed me, asking all sorts of questions. I don't remember them, nor do I remember answering them. I just remember staring at my shoes for what seemed like an eternity. It must have been only a few minutes later that the EMTs wheeled the gurney out into the ambulance. The man was on the gurney, but by the time I looked up, I only saw the back of the EMTs, and that's it. He was gone, and the bathroom was closed and taped over with caution tape. 2 days later, I saw the same security guard and learned his name was Justin. I asked him if he knew what hospital the homeless man was taken to and if he knew his name because I wanted to visit. Justin said, "You didn't know? The guy died." The EMT said he was dead before they even got there. I'm going to clear out his stuff from the back now. Though I was in shock, I offered to help. While we were almost done clearing away his belongings, I found a framed picture of a much younger version of him with a little girl nestled in his blankets. It appeared to be his daughter. As I stared at the photo, Justin found a small book that appeared to be a journal. He asked if I wanted to read it, but it seemed like some kind of invasion of privacy, so I declined. Justin apparently did not feel it was inappropriate because he read it anyway. There were multiple passages about a nice young woman that brought me a plate of food. He said that every time I cooked, he ate like a king. He also said that he was pleasantly surprised by a ritual of me cooking and him eating because he was used to being ignored or treated like a pest. Lastly, a lot of other passages stated how he yearned so badly for sobriety, but just didn't know how. He felt if he just had a little help, a little push in the right direction, and someone, anyone in his life rooting for him, he could be sober. I started to cry because I remembered the piece of paper in my printer that had names of all the inpatient and outpatient treatment facilities in the area. The piece of paper I had printed over a week before his death, but had forgotten to give to him. About 3 weeks after his death is when the activity started. I think the building I live in used to be some kind of dormitory, because on every level by the stairwell, there's a public-style bathroom. On one side of the bathroom sits 5 stalls with toilets, and on one other side, there are 5 stalls with showers. I'm assuming they remodeled it into be apartments. They put bathrooms in every unit, at least they did in mine, but perhaps didn't know what to do with the public bathrooms. I guess they just left them as is. Besides redecorating to make them a little fancier, they must have, because I can't see a dormitory having marble tiles on the floor and walls. No one really uses these bathrooms. I only do when I'm leaving my apartment and it dawns on me that I have to pee. I'm one of those types that always pees before leaving the house. The activity started when I was in these bathrooms. On the toilet, no less. Can't believe it's just announced to the world a ghost visited me while I was peeing. So, there I am, going pee. The door to the stall was rattling fiercely. The stall walls weren't moving at all. The ground wasn't shaking, and it didn't seem like an earthquake or anything. It went on for probably 20 seconds, giving me enough time to look under the door for legs that would indicate someone was banging on the door. It really sounded like someone banging on the door with all their might. Also, these bathrooms aren't really big and echo like crazy. At least they have a few times that I've had company there. I would have heard someone come in, but nothing clicked to indicate anyone was there. I quickly finished and ran out of the stall to look for anyone in the bathroom with me. There was no one, so I ran outside to look down either side of the long hallway and down the stairwell, also deserted. I went back to the bathroom to wash my hands quickly and left, thinking my mind must have been playing tricks. I also went to mention that these bathrooms are directly over the bedroom or the bathrooms in the lobby. A week later, I was walking into these bathrooms again and heard the toilet flush. I didn't think anything of it. Just walked to the mirror, make sure my makeup was perfect. After a few moments, it registered that no one had come out of the stall. I decided I should probably pee before leaving, as per usual, and went to check the stall that I believe the flush came from. The door was open, so I peeked inside and no one was there. I checked every stall, only to find the bathroom completely vacant. Went into another stall, sat down, did my business. Just before I moved to get up, that one flushed while I was sitting there. Safe to say, I was pretty startled. My entire time of living there, I have never known these toilets to flush on their own, especially not 2 different ones. When I passed by the security desk, I asked them to ask maintenance to have a look at the toilets. 2 days after this, I was in the bathroom again, walking into a stall. Not the other ones I'd used previously, and I was pulling my skirt down. The toilet flushed again. That's where we're going to pause the preview portion of this week's EPP bonus episode to find out what happens with this bond of 2 souls, 1 past, 1 not. Keep listening as an extra podcast person. Sign up to hear the whole episode. We put out these bonus ones every single week. It's an extra episode on top of all the free ones. And it's a way to help support our program and keep us on the air. We want to give you a little something extra for supporting. Check it out at ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories. Or search Real Ghost Stories online in the Patreon app. $5 a month gets you access to all the bonus material, all the extras, and it's all commercial free. We do greatly appreciate that. Until next time, for all of us at Real Ghost Stories Online, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.